Hello, my name is Brian Mark Rigg, and today you'll be hearing me talk about my new book, Flamethrower, which is about Japan's Holocaust, the Pacific War, and about the Medal of Honor recipient, Woody Williams. And I'll be also discussing issues about race and military history and the process of writing history. And this will all be done on race, violence, and medicine with host, Brian Williams, and I'm honored to be on the show.
And we are honored to have you, Rigger.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Welcome to Race, Violence, and Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Williams, trauma surgeon at the University of Chicago, serving Chicago's South Side. And today we have a fantastic episode with military historian Brian Rigg. But there's more to this man that I tell you about. He is a United States Marine Corps veteran, also served in the Israeli Defense Force. If you go back to episode 5 in season 1 of Race, Violence, and Medicine, you will hear him talking about his book, Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, which won the Kolbe Award. Now we're bringing him back today to talk about his latest book called Flamethrower. Brian Mark Rigg, thank you for joining us here on Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian.
All right, man. I forgot to mention that you also have your now you own your own financial management company. So you're a true Renaissance man, if there ever was one, the very definition of that. But before we get to your new book, let's talk about what the Kolbe Award means for those that have not heard of that when we talked about your first book, Hitler's Jewish Soldiers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Well, you know, especially you being in Chicago right now, this award basically is run by the Pritzker Military Library and Jim Pritzker's, you know, foundation. And he wanted to set up an award about 20 years ago for the former CIA director, William E. Kolbe, who died tragically. And so he set this award up, and it goes through the Norwich Military Academy in Vermont, the oldest military institution in the United States. And it awards a military historian for the best work on military history of that year that is submitted to the program. And I think I was told there was like 30 or 40 books the year that I was competing for it. And I was blessed in 2003 to get it for Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. So that's the background of the award and how it came into being.
Well, congratulations on that. Now let's fast forward to 2020 with your new book, Flamethrower. Which you don't mess around, you do your books, Brian. It's about, what, 1,000 pages of text and references. But damn, it reads like reads like a movie the way it moves. So
tell Brian.
Tell us the premise of this book for our listeners.
Well, the Flamethrower. The reason why, and thanks for those kind words, especially as a brother writer, that means a lot. Flamethrower, it was a weapon that was used in World War II. A lot of people don't know this. If they saw Hacksaw Ridge, the movie that came out recently, you do see that weapon being used somewhat. If you see Flags of Our Fathers or Letters from Iwo Jima, you do see that weapon being used some. And then, of course, if you see the old film, John Wayne's Sands of Iwo Jima, you see it. But even with those four films that I just mentioned, a lot of people don't know that was one of the main weapons in the Pacific War. And one third of all Japanese who were killed on Iwo Jima and Okinawa, the last two major Pacific War battles that we had before we dropped the atomic bombs, one third of those enemy soldiers were incinerated and killed by flamethrowers. So it was a main weapon. And the guy who I document, who was a Medal of Honor recipient from Iwo Jima, he's still alive, Woody Williams. And that was the weapon he used to do the deeds he did that got him the award. So Flamethrower, started out 5 years ago for the 70th commemoration of the Battle of Iwo Jima. I was on the island with 30 veterans, one of them being Woody Williams. And when I found out that nobody had ever documented his story and used it to tell the larger story, the Pacific War and Iwo Jima, I thought that would be a wonderful tool to go into this area of study about Japan's Holocaust, documenting just how horrible the Imperial Japanese military was in World War II, talk about the Pacific War and what we had to do to win, and then talk about this man's life. So that was the genesis behind writing this book, and those are the themes that I explore when I took up writing this, you know, 1,000-page book, as you said.
So that's kind of a, I mean, I'm guessing this is kind of a serendipitous moment because you're at this ceremony, and there were close to 30 individuals that won the award, but you happened to meet the sole surviving member of that group.
Yeah, you know, there was 30 veterans just in general who had been on the island, corpsmen, other Marine Corps, leathernecks. You had a couple of Navy guys who, ran Higgins boats or were on LSTs, landing ship tanks, the landing ships that brought tanks and jeeps and so on the beach. And Woody was the last living Medal of Honor recipient from the Pacific War and from the Marine Corps, still alive, to be in existence. And he was on this trip. Now, he was one of 27 men who got this award. And for our listeners, if you don't know what the Medal of Honor is, there's four awards in our military that are for valor, for bravery, and for going beyond the call of duty. You have the Bronze Star, and think of it as, you know, fourth place. Silver Star, think of it as third place. You have in the Navy, you have the Navy Cross. And then in the Air Force and Army, you have the Distinguished Service Cross. And then you have the fourth and the most distinguished, the last one, that's like first place, which is the Medal of Honor. Very few people get it. And a lot of times, in order to get it, you have to die doing what you do, to save your buddies and do an incredible brave act. A lot of times these guys died doing that, and they get it posthumously. By way of illustration on Iwo Jima, there was 27 men who got this medal. Only 13 walked off the island. The rest died. So to be meeting Woody Williams in 2015 for the 70th commemoration of the battle, and to be able to talk to him about his experiences was really unique. I mean, to put it also in another context, there were 700,000 Marines in World War II. 82 of them got the Medal of Honor. Only 37 survived the act that they did to get the medal. So it was really a remarkable experience, Brian. And as you, as a brother military serviceman, you can just, imagine what it was like to meet this guy, right, and be able to talk to him.
Yeah, and you mentioned something, Pacific Theater. My grandfather served in the segregated units of the Army in the Pacific Theater, and my dad was in the Air Force, and we were stationed at Okinawa when I was a kid. So,
oh wow,
yeah. So there's some connection to what you're storing. And I'm, clearly I'm a huge World War II buff. I've read a lot of the books, the ones that you mentioned that were movies. I read the books long before there were movies. So this is right in my wheelhouse of interest. So you told us about Flamethrower and its historical significance. You told us about Woody was a flame, that was his weapon he used. You met him,
yeah,
Medal of Honor winner. So how does that lead to this book? You tell this story, but it didn't go as smoothly as you expected.
Oh, yeah, it's not, historical research is never clean, and it's always messy, but it's almost like a historical scavenger hunt. When you get into a historical topic and you use the process of empiricism, meaning you gather the evidence and then you draw your conclusions from what you find. And that always, every historian will tell you, that always leads to you finding totally different conclusions than what you think you would have found when you began.
And as you mentioned, we should let people know that you also have a PhD from Yale in military history.
I did my undergraduate at Yale, and then Yale, I got the Henry Fellowship to do graduate work at Cambridge, and I got my master's and PhD So yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Well, you're using these big words, so people need to know.
Well, I'm a Marine, so I do a very good job with crayons.
Because that is absolutely shocking. You put multi-syllable words together. Now we know why.
That's great. Yeah. So you know, it's kind of like the old phraseology that you and I heard as officers in the military. You know, no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. Well, it's the same way with research. And what I thought I was going to find when I started interviewing Woody and documenting his life, that, you know, we have this incredible American hero, and he is a hero. He did serve bravely on Guam and Iwo Jima. But what I found is that he should have never gotten the Medal of Honor. In fact, he's the only Marine Corps Medal of Honor recipient that I've documented from Iwo Jima that never got the Marine Corps at its highest levels, the Commandant and the Fleet Marine Force Commander, to endorse his work. In fact, Admiral Nimitz didn't even endorse his work, and he was the fleet commander for the Pacific. And all Medal of Honors went through these offices, especially for the Marine Corps. And the reason why he didn't get it is because the evidence was lacking. And when you look at how the initial evidence got put into the chain of command to be even considered for a Medal of Honor, it was self-reporting. He had actually been shooting his mouth off, and his 4-pound bass became 20 pounds, and he was bragging about taking out more pill boxes than he actually did and killing a hell of a lot more Japanese than he actually did. And through telephone, the story took on a life of its own. But by the time he got to higher commands, they realized that the affidavits collected for him did not even come close to documenting what his lower-level officers originally thought he had done.
So what happens at that point? If his story doesn't mesh up with what they're documenting, and I mean, I guess this threw your entire book.
And you know, one of his favorite sidekicks that he used to document his story as well, I found out, was a stolen valor case. He had made up the whole story. So it really unraveled in many areas. So what happens then is you got to, as a historian, you got to tell the truth. Now, what's interesting with Woody, you know, for those who are listening, you may be saying, well, what's so big about documenting this guy? Well, this guy is the biggest living Marine Corps legend today. Ships are being named after him. Expeditionary Seabay Ship Number 4 was just christened after him. And it's the displacement tonnage of two Titanics. It is a huge converted super tanker. That's a floating sea base named after him. You have hospitals named after him, streets named after him. He threw the coin out for Super Bowl 52. Trump has him at rallies all the time. It's a really big deal. So what happens, Brian, when you find out that this guy is not the hero people think he is and that he shouldn't have got the Medal of Honor? In fact, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Charles C. Krulak, when I went over the evidence with him, he said this guy should have never gotten the Medal of Honor. Well, what Woody did, when I'm documenting the truth, because that's what you do as a historian, he slapped a 5th District lawsuit, 5th District Court lawsuit in West Virginia, to try to shut me up as if we live in the Soviet Union, and he tried to prevent the publication of this book. Luckily for me, I fought it, and I've won many of the decisions by the court so far, and the book is in print. And so that was one huge fight I had with this. And as you know, I also had a huge fight with the grandson of the garrison commander, Kuribayashi, which is made famous in Clint Eastwood's film Letters from Iwo Jima, because I found out he was a mass murdering nut job in Hong Kong before he ever got to the island. So,
essentially, you're a historian, you've done the research, and all you're doing is saying, these are the facts.
Bingo. And people don't like that.
Right.
You know,
it's not like you had an axe to grind. It's not like you were trying to disparage anybody's reputation. You were actually out to actually canonize him in a way, right? Your research put potentially down another road, and now you're put in this awkward position where you need to decide what you do, and it led to this the legal battles. How do you feel now? I mean, your book is out. You have it well documented and well resourced. You have Marine Corps commandants that are backing up the veracity of what you produced. What is it you hope a reader of your book will get out of it?
Well, thanks for the question. you know, to be vindicated when you're writing the truth, that's a medal that is invaluable. And so to have historians that I've had to endorse my work, and, you know, two commandants, and then the former commander of SITCOM, General Anthony Zinni, endorse my work and say what Brian's found out is the truth, means an awful lot to me. So I'm pleased with that. But when you ask, you know, what do I hope people will get out of this? You know, from a historical perspective, I hope people will really see how horrible the Imperial Japanese military was, and how thankful we need to be to our America and, you know, fighting women and men at that time for bringing down this horrible regime. I mean, they slaughtered twice as many people as Hitler. They killed 22 million people, and a lot of people don't know about their horrific racism and their fascism. And so I hope this book will really show people that type of enemy and how we defeated him. I also hope the book will really kind of put Marine Corps, you know, society in front of people, and how great this institution is, and how it produced really wonderful fighting men and women. I also talk about a lot of different problems at the time, you know, segregation that was going on. You're mentioning that your grandfather was in the Pacific in a segregated unit. Well, there was a unit that was segregated on Iwo Jima, but they got hit by a banzai. And the one beautiful thing about the Marine Corps is that everybody, regardless of who they are, secretaries, logistic guys, and back then, whether you're in a segregated unit or not, Montfort Marines, you learned how to be a rifleman. You learned how to fight. And these guys set up a skirmish line and fought very bravely. And all of a sudden, you got African-Americans with Bronze Stars for their heroics. And I talk about these type of issues and how a lot of the situations that people were faced with in World War II, of being exposed to African-Americans and Catholics and Protestants and people from the North and the South and Jewish people and so on, you know, especially about a rabbi that I focus on, Rabbi Gittleson, I really show that, man, this was a huge, I think, push to get Truman to integrate the military, which was a very good move in 1948. And I think it really accelerated what we see in the 60s of the civil rights. So I talk about a lot of these issues about American society at the time. And so there's a lot of things I hope people will draw from this book. But ultimately, it's telling you about America and World War II, the Pacific War. And then it talks about the Marine Corps. And it really educates people about how we make our heroes, how we christen these Medal of Honor recipients. You know, I think I made it interesting of really looking how the sausage is made, because, as you know, in the Air Force and, you know, and in the Marine Corps, I mean, we all have our heroes. In the Air Force, it's Hap Arnold and Yeager and all those guys. And in the Marine Corps, you know, we have our Bassalones and our Lejeunes and so on. And it's interesting how the American culture creates its heroes, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and so on. And I really go into that from, you know, World War II perspective. And I think from the feedback I've gotten, a lot of military historians who have read that have found that very interesting. So I've given you a long-winded answer about many things I hope the reader gets from it. But, you know, hey, I packed a lot into a 1,000-page book, Brian.
It was impressive. And I've enjoyed all your books. But I've not read them all yet, but the ones I've read, they're educational, but they're a good read. They're
page turners. Well, I appreciate it.
So, Brian Mark Rigg, Marine Corps veteran, also veteran of the Israeli Defense Force, PhD in military history from Yale, multi-published author, award-winning author, financial management company founder and CEO, and now he's talking about his latest book, Flamethrower. Brian, I mean, what is the full subtitle of the book? I shortened it to Flamethrower.
Yeah, so it's Flamethrower, and then the subtitle is Marine Corps veteran Woody Williams and Marine Corps veteran and Medal of Honor recipient Woody Williams and his controversial award, Japan's Holocaust and the Pacific War. That's the subtitle. Just kind of telling you the three major themes that I go into. So that's the, you know, Flamethrower, and I gave you the background of why that is called that, yeah. And then that's the subtitle.
government or make it up and fight. Available on Amazon. Ryan, folks, after this.
You know, if you want to have a signed copy, or if you want to talk to me about, you know, your own historical research, or, you know, topics about World War II, you can reach me through my website, which is www.brianrigg.com, brianmarkrigg.com, and it's just my full name, Brian with a Y like in Yankee, Mark with a K, and then Rigg with two G's, R-I-G-G. That's one way that you can reach out to me if you want to get a book and talk to me. If you just want to get the book on Amazon, I got three mediums that the book is published in. You have the Kindle version, you have the audio version, you have a hardback, and you can find it there on Amazon and, you know, order it today if you want.
And you did the, do you do the audio for your own book?
Yes, I did. I did. Oh. So if people want to hear my voice more, if they like it, what they heard on the podcast, though, they can have 20 hours of me reading about the Pacific War.
And people should know that you're like, you're hardcore. You're actually out working out right now as we record this podcast.
Yeah. Trying to look like you, Brian, staying in shape.
That's dedication. All right. I want to thank you all again for tuning in to Race, Violence, and Medicine. You can catch up with me at my website, brianwilliamsmd.com. And I spell Brian with an I. I'm also on Twitter at BHWilliamsMD, and you can get to me on LinkedIn as well. Shoot me an email, shoot me a direct message. I will respond. And also, if you like this podcast, please share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. It's a labor of love. I'm not making any money off this. I just like talking to these great guests and sharing this information. I get as much out of this as I hope you do as well. Again, stay safe out there. COVID is still going strong. So stay safe, healthy, keep your family and friends safe. And I will be tuning in. I'll be catching up with you again in about a week with a new episode. Take care, everyone.